Enda, you are now entering a space for black history, a voice for the voiceless. The Harbinger on the Line Revolution. A marriage of chillers and platform that will last longer than it, girl's marriage. Welcome to Black Excellence. Do not fear, for if you do, just sip on some grandeur. And if you still do, ask ourselves, what would Mapapunzi do? Pagama chila, itlesha lefiki. Ungoyigi, even when they ask you, how sabi ini? Do not fear, for if you do, just say, anistivi. This is the medicine of censorship. This is the pill. Which one is that one? Podcast and chill.
And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome one of the funniest comedians we have in the country. Give it up for Donovan David Goliath.
I need that thing. I need it here. Like, I wish we had a button. Press.
You know this nigga speaks better closer than I do. He's fluent.
He's all the way from the
previous. I'll tell him, Fundin.
You see, the moment you said Mfundin, I'm like, this is not going to go well at all. Once you said Mfundin, I'm like, yo. No. Don't you find it weird how people in Joburg who try and imitate Xhosa people.
Yeah,
Mfundin. Yeah. It's always that word. Why is it specifically Mfundin? Mfundin.
So you're like a Xhosa man in a colored body.
No, you know what? Dude, I grew up Mthatha in the Eastern Cape. Yeah. You know what I mean? And all my friends were Xhosa growing up. My dad is from Itsofimvaba. I grew up Itsofimvaba, you know? Oh, that's our family home. And it's just what it is. You know what I mean?
So like, you speak Xhosa.
No, he's colored.
He's colored?
Yeah.
And your mom?
Colored.
Colored?
Yeah, she grew up Libode, also in the Eastern Cape, you know? They're colored folk in those areas.
Wow.
You know, it's just nobody speaks about it. You know, like we never go,
deep.
Yeah. So, yeah, we just, you grow up speaking Xhosa because everybody else does. Mm. You know, it's not like you learn it to try and fit. It's just what it is, you know.
Did you go to the mountains?
I didn't go to the mountain. I didn't. So technically, no.
Can't say I'm not Xhosa.
No.
What are you doing at the mountains, right?
Yeah. And, you know, even weddings, funerals, you know, we adopt and incorporate Xhosa culture. We slaughter, you know, we do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah.
Amazing, yeah, because it's where they're from. Mm. You know, that's what they know. Mm. And it's what we do. So that's what it is.
Dude, before we talk about your career, please explain the Goliath thing.
Yes.
Because you and who's the other Goliath again?
Jason and Nicholas. And
you guys aren't related.
No, we're not brothers.
That is why I don't understand. Please.
Yeah.
Okay, so we met on stage 10 years ago, right? And I'd just gotten into comedy. A few months later, Jason and Nicholas decided they want to do comedy as well. We met at Cool Runnings, the underground.
Yeah, I love Cool Runnings, Melville.
The Haven. That's where everybody started.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Why did it close down, dog? Fuck.
I don't know. Yeah, no, it was quite a thing when it closed down. It's so weird. I did the last show just before it closed down.
Wow.
Because I did the show, and then in the week, they sent a message on a, like a comedian WhatsApp group to say, "Bah, this is it." You know, nobody knew why it was closing down.
Yeah.
So we met on stage, and we were like, hey, you know, same surname. And I'd known of Jason because he was in a lot of TV ads.
Okay.
Before, and then he knew me from working in advertising.
Mm.
So we just kind of knew of each other. It's the only other person I've ever met with the surname Goliath.
Mm.
And they'd just done a set, and we were chatting backstage, and we just hit it off, and that's how it started. That's
so you guys are not related at all?
We're not. So Jason and Nicholas are cousins. And then Kate Goliath, who's our manager, is Jason's sister.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, it's wild. And you know what's weird is people still think we're brothers to this day.
Yeah.
So people say Goliath brothers, and sometimes we're just like, yeah, sure.
Whatever.
That's what it is. Because it helped us. You know, it worked as a hook, you know, because it was something interesting to write about. Initially, people would think, how is it possible that we were like the Wayans brothers?
Yeah, yeah.
We're brothers, we're happy and we're singing and we're colored. You see how perfectly it works?
God, I like that.
And we'd get calls, you know, to do interviews because people wanted to know about this. And when we get there and they go, so how is it possible that you guys are, you know, how is it possible three brothers are doing comedy? Then once we drop the bomb, they're like, whoa, what are you talking about? And the strange thing is, this is the weird thing. It's like psychology is an interesting thing.
Okay.
Because people, sometimes they would look at us and they go, no, but you guys look alike.
Mm.
Like, no, we don't look alike at all. Mm. At all. It's because of the association with the surname is uncommon, obviously. We all do comedy. So there must be some form of connection. And they believed. And they thought we were lying. They're like, you're only doing this too.
Mm.
No, we're not related.
And when you go down the family tree, there's no way where you guys...
Hey, dude, we've tried, eh? Yeah. We've tried. And there's nothing. Maybe like far, far down. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know, bro.
Because there aren't many Goliaths, you know? I don't even know anyone else who's a Goliath apart from you guys.
Really?
Yeah, I've never met Goliath.
You know what? And since we started the brand Goliath and Goliath, then people started popping up out of the, hey, cuz. Who's this now? You know, now all of a sudden there are many Goliaths out there all over the place, you know? So, yeah, it's weird, man. And I'm glad that you mentioned my second name up front because a lot of people don't even know that my second name is David.
Mm.
You know? That's funny.
In fact, you know, when I got here, Mac was calling me, hey, David, what's up? I'm like, yes, I want him to start this thing by calling me David.
Yeah. So,
and that was my grandfather's name.
Yeah.
So my
grandfather
was called David Goliath.
Yeah.
You see me, I've got like a barrier, you know, just to break that. But he was David Goliath, like straight in. I don't know what his parents were thinking, but... yeah, bro, that's me.
I wanted to ask you, like, was there pressure to like live up to his name?
To that name?
Yeah, to that, your grandfather's name.
No.
What kind of a guy was he, Vel?
I'd never met him.
Oh.
I never met him. Yeah, he passed away before I knew him.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I never met him at all. But apparently funny, but very strong, hard man.
Mm.
You know, yes, like playing on both sides of the names.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. The name is very important, dog.
Yeah,
like people end up becoming their names.
That's interesting. Like Tiger Woods, Usain Bolt. It's in your name.
Yeah,
it's written.
Right? Like yes.
You can't become anything else.
MacGyver.
You know? You know what I'm saying?
Right. And like, what happened to your crew, the hip hop crew you're in back in Mtata? What's it called?
Outbreak.
Outbreak crew, yeah.
Ah, man.
Nigga was an MC, bro.
I used to rap.
You spit bars.
Oh, bro. More than the chocolate aisle at ShopRite, you know? Yeah, man. Come on. Go all day. Yeah, dude, we were in a rap group in Mtata called Outbreak.
Yeah.
My alias was Acid Rain.
Acid Rain.
Acid Rain.
Yeah, because you know back then, like we were influenced by you know, like hard gangster rap.
Yeah.
About Mobb Deep, Wu-Tang. You know where it was lyrical fitness.
Gangster.
Yeah. Mm. So Acid Rain, and then a friend of mine, Miguel, who still raps to this day, he's amazing. He was called Peeps the Villain, and then we had my cousin, who was That Dog, right? That was his name.
That Dog.
Yeah. You know, and
I would design the posters.
Man, I'll send you a picture of like the poster. I still have one, and I would draw them. So I could draw back in the day. So I would draw the posters, and then wherever we're performing, like at school, Mr. and Miss Mtata, Mr. Sales House, whatever competition it was, you know, if we got called, then we had like one song, bruh. Then we'd have to go, we'd put these posters up, and that's where we would perform, you know. And then I moved to PE to go and study, and the group kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
Because the other guys,
yeah?
I guess.
Yeah.
The group kind of fell apart. And then when I'd come back home, right, just to visit, I'd be, you know, just chilling at home and, you know, I'd hear like somebody whistling outside. And I get outside and I see there's this crew of young kids just standing there. Yo, Acid Rain, what up? What? And I'd get there, yo man, we want to battle, dog.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah, we heard you rap, dog, we want to battle, dog. Then I'm like, yeah, no, we're not. I don't know, what is this? This is kids, bro. What is this? I haven't done this in like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Hey, anyway, I'm like, sharp, let's go. We go to their house and they pull out a cassette. They got a beat that they've just cut from somewhere. And then the guy, now he comes to, he does his thing. Then I do my thing. And then he does his thing. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Wow.
And it was just like, what a cool thing.
Yeah.
You know, what a cool thing to do. Like, it was so raw, bro. It was so hardcore.
Wow,
and, yeah, no, I just, but I loved, I love rap, bro. Rap is you know, stuff that I've brought it into like a lot of my comedy sets.
Yeah.
You'll always find, you know, hip hop has been a big part of I guess my world and, you know,
that's
what I
crazy,
love and what
man.
I do.
I would have never thought you were a rapper, bro.
Yeah, dude, me, I used to go in, bro.
Your best verse?
I used to go in.
Can you spit your best verse?
Do I even remember? Like an old verse.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So
one everyone has verses. A go-to verse, bro.
Yes, yes, yes. You have to have a go-to. Like, if you can like, get asked on the spot, you have to. You can't just in jail, you know? So it was like, I tick like a time bomb, veins rip through my right arm. I catch you in your nightgown and then I slap you with my right palm. You in a state of panic like a nervous MC on his first night on. Scared to death, I hold the mic phone so when the light's on, pray to God you don't come face to face with the mic dawn. My music got you speechless, innocent like a child born. Come on!
Hey!
Come on!
Whoa!
I know Chino XL.
Youngster CPT, is that you?
Youngster UMT. Yeah, bruh. And you know, that verse actually got us, Coca-Cola was like, you know, doing these talent shows around Mthatha. They went to our local shopping mall called Circus Triangle, right? And they parked this truck and we were, just happened to be walking past and they called us, you know. Oh, somebody would just say, yo, man, why don't you guys go up and do your thing? And we carried a backpack with us with like cassettes, with like random beats that we had stolen from CD singles and wherever else.
Yeah.
And they gave us these oversized Sprite t-shirt or basketball vests.
Yeah.
We went on and we did our thing. And they told us, yeah, bro, this is it. You know, in your mind, when you're like 14 and 15 and you go, I've made it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be a rapper now.
Yeah.
Those guys never came back. You know what they did? They still they asked us for the vests back. Said, can you just give these back to us when you're done? We just need to put it on somebody else, but we'll give it to you at the end. Those guys bounced, so nothing came of it at all.
Dude. So why did you come to Joburg then? Like, why did you leave Mthatha?
Because I so I left PE to study, well, I left Mthatha. Sorry,
yeah,
to study art and design
in PE.
In PE,
okay.
PE Tech before it became NNMU.
Okay.
Right, so I studied art and design there. But even before then, I was doing a lot of religious oil paintings.
Okay.
I did one first in Mthatha at my church, and then my priest moved to Durban to Marian Hill, and he built, you know, a lot of stuff there. And I would go, and in fact, there's still a painting up in Marian Hill if you go today. Massive religious oil paintings. I've always been able to draw and
that
stuff.
That you did?
That I did, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, super real, like hyper realistic, big, like the size of a door type of thing.
Whoa,
you know?
Bro.
And he would then commission me to do these things, which, you know, gave me a little bit of pocket money, you know, just so I didn't put pressure on my parents for any cash when I'd moved to PE to study art and design. And I studied, you know, got my degree.
Mm.
And while I was studying, it was in my fourth year, I sent a mail through to an agency in Joburg because I'd seen my boss at the time, I'd seen him speak at Design Indaba.
Okay.
Because I'd won a competition to go to Design Indaba to write a motivation on why I should be chosen because the tickets was astronomical.
Mm.
It was like, at the time, 2,000 for a ticket to go. I was never going to get an opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
And I had no intention of coming to Joburg either because, you know, when you're from a small town, you develop like weird small town syndrome and you think that you're not good enough
for the big
to
town.
Go to Jersey, Cape Town, whatever it is, especially in the industry that I wanted to go in.
Yeah.
I saw my boss speak at Design Indaba and I was blown away. And I just emailed the portfolio through and I got a reply the same day going, hey, man, you know, this guy wants to chat to you. We chat on the phone. He's like, you sound interesting.
Yeah.
You got an interesting name. You come from Mthatha. There's all of these things, you know. Why should we hire you? So I explain. And then 2 days later, they fax a contract through to me.
Wow.
And they go, there's something about you. Mm. Don't know what it is, but I like you, and there's something about you, and I think that you'll fit into our agency. I signed that contract. I sent it back, and only 2 months later, I drove in my city Golf with no aircon and a tape deck.
Listening to your wet rhymes.
And and a window, you know, my city Golf that didn't go down. It had like a screwdriver in it. And I drove to Joburg to start a job in advertising and meet my boss and colleagues that I'd never met before.
Wow. What is the title?
I was an art director.
For the agency?
At an agency, yeah, called Network BBDO, which at the time was, I think, number 3 in the world.
Yeah.
Whoa. So Network BBDO launched, like, the What Makes You Black Metro FM ads, you know, those big ones, you know?
Whoa.
Yeah. They did that. So I was like, yo, this is where I want to be. Whoa. And you must know, bro, you know when you come from a small town and you mention that you want to study graphic design?
Sure.
You know, there are no mentors there.
No. What is that? No.
Exactly. Where are you from? You're from Polokwane. You're from Polokwane, no? Where are you from?
Venda.
Yeah. Venda, where in your hood, who can you go to there to say, can you just break down graphic design for me, please? Man. Nobody. There's
I
no
still
mentor.
Have to break down podcasting to my grandmother.
You know what I mean? I'll never forget, bro.
Aunt.
I was in matric, no? And I had decided I wanted to do this thing. And the only reason I decided was at my school. I went to a school called Zingisa Comprehensive High School. You know when there's comprehensive in it, bro? When there's comprehensive, at some point a tar road is going to end here. Comprehensive says a lot if it's in a name. See, you know, like schools like St. John's. They don't even say St. John's School.
Cool. Yeah.
No, they don't even say the surname. Just St. John's. Zingisa Comprehensive High School. And we had a teacher come through, Jason Crane, a white guy, you know, who he's the one, because he saw I could draw and all of that. And he's like, hey, man, why don't you do this thing? He's the one who told me about it. And like, I had no idea what I was going to do.
You're just drawing, man.
And I went onto the site, PE Tech site. I saw this stuff. I'm like, whoa, you know, all this time, you know, I've been looking at head cut posters. I love head cut posters, you know, just on the side of the road. I love the simplicity of the communication where you don't have to say any words. You can just point to a picture, a side profile of a guy's head, and that's how your hair will look when you leave.
Mm.
That's basic, simple communication. I didn't understand that it was graphic design, you know, even though it seems naive.
Mm.
He told me about it, and that's why I decided. And then I'll never forget, I was in matric studying. I was studying for biology.
Yeah.
And we had an uncle come over, and he was like super successful. You know, he worked at this big telecoms company. He was rich. He had nice cars, you know. So everybody was like, hey.
This is the
and guy. He asked me, what are you going to study?
Yeah.
So I said graphic design.
Yeah.
This guy burst out laughing. You know, you're sitting there and you're like, oh man, burst out laughing. He had a drink in his hand, you know, and he's trying not to spill it. He calls my dad, and he goes, hey man, please, whatever you do, convince this lady not to go into this field.
Yeah.
So my dad's like, why? And he goes, because he's going to end up printing Mickey Mouse t-shirts at a flea market just here down the road. Bruh, do you know how hard that hits?
Yeah.
Because now you've already sent in forms, you've been accepted, you know, and now you got to go and do this thing. And I believe him.
Yeah,
he's successful.
Him, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm so glad I didn't listen to him at all.
Shout
came
out
to Joburg. Yeah, no. Yo,
what does
he
say
cut
now?
Me deep. Oh, he's lost everything.
Oh, for real?
Yes.
You're the one trying to spill your drink
he's
now.
Lost, he's lost everything. Yeah, no, his life just, maybe he got too arrogant.
Yeah.
You know?
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it all just fell apart for him. Like, his life is in shambles at the moment, you know? And
sounds like Ngonde Balfo.
Life will humble you, eh, Balfo?
Yeah, so. And that's when I came to Joburg and started my job in advertising.
Where did you first live in Joburg? Because I'm thinking you don't know anyone at that time, right?
I came to where every person from Mthatha comes to, Buklu. It's either Buklu or Midrand. That's it. You know, it's like a rite of passage. If you come to Joburg, you must come through here first. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I lived there for about a year and a half, and then I couldn't deal with the traffic from Buklu to Hyde Park where my office was.
Yeah.
And I moved closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, bro.
And you haven't done any other jobs apart from that?
That was my first job ever.
Wow.
I walked in, and that's the first job I ever did. Yo, dude, man. You know, it was such an experience. Like I say, somebody from a small town getting exposed to the things that I was exposed to was massive. First of all, you know, they pull you like on set, you know, you come and hang with the big guys here while they're shooting this TV ad. Now you're seeing the celebrities that you're seeing on TV who are starring in whatever else. We're at the SABC meeting people that I've only ever seen on TV. It's mind blowing, but I'm trying not to like freak out because no, I got to act like professional here, you know.
Who's the first celeb you saw?
The first celeb I saw was, wow, that's a good question. Who was the first celeb I saw?
Saul Penduka?
Nah.
Hey, man. I was an intern then, working opposite you at the YFM Hyde Park.
Oh, were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Yes. Oh, you know that agency.
Yes, I know. I know the agency.
You know the agency.
Same complex as YFM. He knows it too.
Which one? Which one was that?
That by Hyde Park.
For real? Were you there, bro?
Was there. Yes.
Right opposite.
Right opposite.
Oh, shit.
Exactly. That's
a small world, man.
That's exactly where I was.
Yeah.
Do you know who the first?
Probably bought lunch at the same place.
Probably.
Yeah.
Nah, me, I used to go to Pick and Pay and buy that. I'm sure, you know, there must have been a moment where like, Hadi Brah, I'm just trying to get to that. There must have been, you know. That's where I worked. And David Gao.
Oh,
strangely David enough. Gao. And you know why it was David Gao? We had a party at work and Teboho Mahlatsi, the director, had just shot something for the agency and he brought David Gao with him. Dude, and I was like,
losing your mind. Guys, this is Dada Man Day.
Why is nobody else freaking out here? You know, like nobody else is freaking. I'm like, it's David Gao
from Promenade.
And I was too shy to go and introduce myself to him. And we'll like, chat about it later, like how David actually played a very important role in where I am today.
No, let's talk about it now.
So we're going to skip over the whole advertising thing.
Nah, we'll go back to this. This is podcasting.
Oh, yeah. We'll do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Go anyway.
So when I decided
structure.
There must be order here. Yeah, it's segues. That's the word. I do comedy, bro. You can't come back to hi. So when I decided to leave my job after 6 years, you must know I've never watched comedy before, ne? Comedy, I've never watched comedy live before. The first time I watched a stand-up show was like in 2010.
Tolesmo, ne?
Tolesmo, Ndumiso Lindi, John Flismus.
Cool Runnings. That's the Cool Runnings lineup,
dude.
Man.
Mm. So these guys were on stage and I was like, what? Mm. How are these guys on stage telling stories in Jay about their lives? Just, they got the audience in their hands.
And getting paid.
And getting paid. And that's what I started missing from advertising. You know, I just hated that if I come up with an idea, it's got to go to somebody to approve and then go to another person, then go to a client. By the time it comes back to you, it's not yours. And it was, I was burning out completely, man. I was physically, mentally, totally unhealthy. Gone. And not being paid, you know, wasn't being paid well at all. So I decided, let me give this thing a shot because this is what I've been missing. This is what I want to do. Mm. And I wrote a 5-minute set. I performed and Ndumiso Lindi, actually, another one I must give a lot of credit to.
Yeah.
He saw me perform, and I did a second and a third show where Uskumba was at.
Yeah.
And Skumba invited me to Tembisa to perform.
His hometown.
Yeah. So I'm in Tembisa, you know, on Skumba's lineup. Ndumiso calls David and says, Dave, come through. There's this kid, you know. David comes through. You know, and he sees me perform and he's like, hey man, that was nice. And this is how Dave talks to you. Dave's always like, so he's got like his phone and he's like, yeah, that's dope, bro. That was
damn,
nice.
That's rude.
Yeah, no. He's because he's like, he's busy like chatting here, but he's just like, he's trying to like give you attention and give this person attention, you know? And he's like, because he has to bounce now, because he just came to see me and he has to go, but now he's explaining, but he wants to chat to me before he has to leave, you know? So it's like, dude, that was dope, bro. Listen, do you know Blacks Only? Like, what? what are you saying? He's like, yeah, do you want to come and do the show? You can come. I'll give you 5 minutes, you know. I think it was Santon Convention Center, whatever it is, packed. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And he puts me on, and I've been doing comedy now for like 6 months.
Wow.
Whoa, bro.
Yeah. And he puts me on, and dude, what? Yo, that, you know, after that, if you've ever jumped on stage and done comedy, The second you get that tsunami of laughs hitting you, after you've thrown out an idea that people relate to or resonate with, you can't, it's an indescribable feeling. Yeah. There's no coming back after that.
Better than orgasm, like, ne?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. 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 But I think that was it for me, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so David was very instrumental, you know, in making me go, yeah, I think I've made the right decision here. This is the industry that I want to play
in. Weren't you nervous? It's been 6 months, bro. You don't know what this crowd likes. It's Joburg. You're new in town.
I was nervous, but when you're working for a big ad agency, you're often being sent into a room to present an idea that's going to cost 20 million and you want that, the marketing person, whoever, to hand that over to you.
Yes, yes.
So that's where your skills come in.
You've got to be able to
get involved, you know. So I think the ability to get on stage and speak to strangers, you know, it's something that's always been inherent in me. I mean, when I was a rapper, you know, that helped. I was always in, like, you know, school plays or whatever it is. So I'd always put myself forward. You know, I guess I like the attention of people reacting to my crazy thoughts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, it was nerve-wracking, obviously, because you're also on a lineup here with massive dudes, you know. It was David, obviously, on the lineup. Chris Mapane was on that lineup. I think Sfiso Nene, Tips, Shampoonizer was on that lineup. Who else was there? Pops might have been on that lineup as well. Yeah. It was big, bro. It was a
and they're all
big,
doing
big
well,
lineup.
Bro. All those guys on that lineup.
Oh yeah, they're killing it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
When did you know that you were funny? You know,
I think you always kind of know that you're funny. You're often always the dude who's kind of cracking
class clown.
Yeah, you know, and class clown, like Jason Goliath, actually, is the best way to describe it. You know, when you pry funny. You're chilling around the prime, you're always the one kind of like waiting for the last punchline. The guy has just killed it here, but you go, ah, let me take your, I'll take all your attention and your shine and kind of throw it in. That's always a weird question, you know, if somebody asks you, when did you know you were funny? I don't know, you know.
Look, there's funny people, but they're not funny enough to be on stage.
Yes.
You know, like, when you're funny enough to be on stage, how do you know that?
I think when you know, comedy is such a difficult thing, and a lot of people always see the end result of comedy. They see you on stage doing it, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or whatever it is, and they go, ah, that's dope, I want to try it. But the process of writing and believing that this sequence that you've put together here, that you're going to throw out to these people, hopefully it's going to resonate with them. That's the hard part, you know, because you can doubt yourself. Because, you know, that's why an MC is always so important in a show. Because the MC is kind of like the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
He tests the waters and he gauges the level of energy. So you always have to be listening, you know, to where they're at, you know, what are they responding to. And you're constantly changing your mind.
If you're a DJ, you need to listen to the DJ before.
Same.
Ah, yes.
To see. Perfect. Yeah, what's just to working. Kind of see where they're at. But you also can't go, okay, I need to do this set because I think this is what they want to hear.
Because
then you're always pandering towards the audience and you're not really selling you, your true self. Because if there's six of you on a lineup, all of you are gunning for the biggest laugh. You want to be remembered. You want to be the guy that gets remembered, whether you went first, second, third, fourth, or last.
Yeah.
You want to be the guy that goes, S-s-s. You see, that dude was that thing that he did. And that's what separates people, you know?
But doesn't that make you tank sometimes at shows?
Oh, all the time.
Nah.
Oh, all the time, bro. And that's the thing that makes it exciting. Because if you're trying new material, and you have to try new material, you never know if it's going to work or not, you know? You know, dude, you know how many times I've died on stage? It's the worst thing, but there are two ways you can look at it. And we've seen young guys come on our stages that we've built as Goliath and Goliath. They try this thing out. They're confident and arrogant before they come on. You know, I did this show wherever and I killed it. You know, I've got this, blah, blah, blah. And then they die. You'll never see them again. You'll never see them again, you know, because they can't deal with it.
Yeah,
they can't deal. It's harsh, bruh. Because you are your most vulnerable on that stage. It's you and your ideas, and that's it. It's a one-man sport. Nobody else can help you, you know. And the audience decides whether they like you or not immediately. It's immediate. I did a show once also with Uskumba. We were in East London. And there was a guy from East London. And he was I can't remember his name now, but he was an actor, you know, and on a big show, what was it? It'll come to me. So because it was his hometown, they were like, dude, you close the show.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, these are my people, man. I can close. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you made a big mistake because when he found that out, he was like, "Sharp, I'm closing the show." The lineup was massive. There were like 8 or 9 comics on the lineup, you know. And when you're in the Eastern Cape and you ask homies to jump on and you ask them to do 5 minutes, you gotta wait for 20 minutes there before they come off.
Yeah.
Because once they have fun, they go, you
they
know.
Go, yeah.
So he's gonna come on much later, and he knows it. So he starts drinking early on.
Ooh.
And we telling him, "Hey, dog,
relax. Was he drinking champagne?"
No, he was drinking whiskey.
Okay.
Comics don't drink champagne. you'll never meet a comic in those years. "Can I have some champagne?" No, comics don't drink champagne. You're crazy. And he drinks, bruh.
Yeah, yeah.
He's drinking. And we keep telling him, "Fedru, slow down." You know, after every comic, after every guy that comes over,
maybe he was nervous, dog.
He wasn't nervous. These are his people.
He's comfortable.
You know, and he's done this
he's
before.
Too comfortable.
He's too comfortable. Yeah. That's the thing, you know? And it's something that we'll talk about afterwards. He's too comfortable. By the time he comes on, right, he's already out of it. But he's like, "Don't worry about it. I got this." They introduce him, comes on stage, arms up.
Look at
the
me.
Man.
Yes.
Look at me. The audience goes crazy because they see who it is. This is our guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he goes, drops his first gag. Yeah, it's okay. Drops his second gag. Yeah, little chuckles. Doesn't land. So then he goes, "You know what? Let me do this again. I don't think the MC did a good job of hyping me up enough. Let me reintroduce myself." He reintroduces himself. Now, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome." Comes out. And he gets to the front of the stage. He's got the mic. He takes his jacket off, rolls it up, throws it into the audience. The audience member catches it, rolls it up, and throws it back. Now it hits him. But you know what was the worst part? He's holding the mic, and then you hear... You see, it's that. But you know when you hear a microphone hitting a tooth, then you're like... Dude. And the audience bursts out laughing. Now he's trying to recover. They keep going back to this thing over and over again. Eventually they start booing him 5 minutes into his set.
Whoa.
This man has to do 45 minutes to close this show.
He's the headliner.
And they've been waiting for the headliner. Out. That was it. He had to bounce. He had to leave the stage. Then they started calling back some other comic. Who was it?
To save the day.
Yeah, bring that guy back. A guy who was just an open spot. Anyway, he smashed it.
Yeah.
Right?
They brought him back to close the show.
Fuck me, that's crazy.
Man.
That
you know, sucks. And that's the thing, bro, with this, with comedy.
Yeah.
Any comic will tell, they're always a little bit nervous before they go on. Always. Because you have to leave room for something to go wrong.
Mm.
You got to respect the audience, you know?
Mm.
Just because you killed it yesterday or the day before, this audience might be different and they might not like you. You always have to be prepared to fight.
You're only as good as your last show.
That's it, bruh. Mm. That's it, you know? And with us, it's like hitting the reset button every single time because audiences are different. You can't take the same set in Jersey and just go to Durban or Cape Town, you know? It's one country. But every province has dynamics that you have to, you know, you evolve your material and change things here and there to fit to the rhythm of that audience. Bro, I've done a gig in Durban once where this homie, it was a strong lineup, bro. Yo, Celeste Ntuli, Riyad Musa, Nick Rabinovitz, big, like a big lineup, you know, heavy hitters only. We are three comics in. And this one Bali from Durban, he's an old Bali. Goes on, I'm like, "Hey, this Bali is wearing a full suit." He goes on, "Dude, you know when people are running out of their chairs?
Yeah.
Because it's pandemonium here in this room. It's like 2,500 people in this room. He's got them here.
Wow.
Right? He's supposed to finish on 10 minutes. They chanting. So now the organizer's like, "Hey, carry on. That's nice here." This guy destroys, right? He's the third comic on. He absolutely obliterates completely. Every comic that came after suffered.
Yes.
And you know what's weird is he does email and internet jokes. And we're like, "Yeah, but how are you just telling..."
What are email and internet jokes?
You know, I mean, if there's a joke written about, I don't know, Obama. You know, you see a joke, like a meme, you know?
Okay.
So he just switches it up and he makes it South African. He replaces Obama with Cyril Ramaphosa, for example.
Shit cold.
Yeah, I'm like, "Hey man, what heck is this, man? Like, and you know what he said? He was like, straight up, I didn't say I'm a comedian. I said I'm a joke teller.
Hey!
I'm like, whoa, bro, you are playing this comedy thing on God mode. Yeah. Destruction.
Is that why you haven't been on stage for the past 2 years? He hasn't been on stage for 2 years, bro.
Still looking at his wounds.
No. This was long ago, man. This is like 5 or 6 years ago. No. I haven't been on stage in 2 years because 2020, when, you know, lockdown happened and obviously, you know, entertainers couldn't perform, we had to close down our comedy clubs.
You lost money then, eh?
We did.
Jeez,
yeah,
man.
We did lose money. Look, we had a comedy club in Melrose Arch, which was...
You had?
Had, yeah.
So it's gone?
The Goliath Comedy Club, man. We had a huge comedy club on the high street in Melrose Arch.
Fuck, it's gone? I thought it's still there.
No, it's gone, man.
Oh,
so we sold the space and a restaurant took over. And then we opened a space in Melville. And that space, we had to shut that one down when the lockdown happened. Man. But
sorry to hear that, man. Fuck.
No, hey, but it's been hard, bro. Like, cause we've been, you know, it was, at some point we were running like 5 gigs a week in Jersey as Goliath and Goliath. It's very difficult because you don't make money from that from gigs. Cause a lot of the money that you make at the door goes to comics, goes to everything else. You know, so it. I mean, the Goliath Comedy Club for us was, I guess, the best business card we've ever created because we introduced ourselves. You know what? Until we had opened that space, did we get called onto The Money Show to chat about comedy as a business?
Wow. I get you.
Yeah.
I get
we were on Destiny Man on the cover all of a sudden. Now it was like, oh, comedy's a business. But they needed the facade to take us seriously. Because it's always just like it's a hobby, you know? And you're just cracking jokes, you know? And yeah, that's why, I mean, we let it go. But my wife and I, we started... She's a classical violinist.
Okay.
Right. So we started creating content in 2020. And because of my advertising background, I knew how to make, I know the software, I know all of that stuff, right? And we just started entertaining ourselves, I guess.
Oh, wow.
And then people, you know, gravitated towards it. It became a thing. And because, and dude, I was shooting everything on an iPhone.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I was like using its full capabilities.
Mm.
But editing it in such a way that it looks as professional and as legit as possible.
Yeah.
And because...
What, iMovie?
No, I was using Final Cut. I started with iMovie.
Yeah, we all start there.
Yeah, then I graduated to Final Cut. Mm. But because production houses were shut down and nobody was working, brands would then reach out and go, okay, Sharp, we'll come directly to you. Can you just make this for us? This is our brief. What can you do? What can you turn around? And we just started rocking. 2020 was like probably my most successful year in terms of profits.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Because you're doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Wow.
Because we just created our own thing.
Yeah.
And we weren't competing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We weren't competing with anybody. We're just trying to find simple creative solutions that could be churned out very quickly, you know, that still had a bit of finesse, that still had a bit of our personality as well. And then it just kept going. 2021, we kept doing the same thing, you know, 2022. But I like the space that I'm playing in now because... I'm not the kind of person who can just gravitate to one thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not me. Like, comedy is great, and I always do comedy. I'm always doing corporates. I'm always on stage at, you know, often, like twice a week at least, but never just for stand-up. And here's an interesting story. So, March 2020, I did my one-man show. Actually, February.
Yeah.
I did a one-man show, right? At UJ in a big space there. Dope, sold out, 2 shows back to back. I pay for a crew to come and film it because we're gonna sell, right? We've already signed a contract to sell to a big broadcaster, right? Do the shows, it's amazing. That's on the Saturday. On the Sunday, the director calls me and he says, yo man, can you come sit with me and edit?
Yeah.
You know? And this is my second one-man show, right?
Yeah.
Can you sit with me and edit on Tuesday? I'm like, yeah, no, sharp, of course, you know. Monday, I try and call him, can't get hold of him. My manager, Kate, is like, yo, man, have you seen this guy? We're trying to get hold of him. Can't get hold of him. Tuesday, nothing. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. After 2 weeks, obviously, I mean, a missing persons thing goes out because now nobody can find him.
Is this like... This is a serious thing now.
It's very serious.
Whoa.
And then it turns out he was killed.
Yo.
And then, yeah, bro, you know, lost the footage. Never got it.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So to this day, I've never received the footage. Nobody knows where it is.
You couldn't get your hands on the computer?
No. It's probably part of evidence.
Yeah,
we'll never see that show, ever.
Jeez.
You know? And, you know, that was a big knock for me because it was quite an emotional thing.
Yeah.
It was very emotional thing that, you know.
And it's costly.
Yes. You know, it was very costly, you know. And we obviously had to pay up front, you know, to make sure that, you know, the crew's there and the crew's strong. Yeah, bro. I never got that footage back, you know, and I will never get that footage back, you know. And I think that also just kind of threw me off a little bit.
Man,
it was hectic. Because you know when you're building up to a big one-man show, you put everything into it.
Everything.
Yes,
and
bro.
The best jokes.
Yeah, dude. Everything. And obviously, imposter syndrome starts kicking in once you've got the whole thing. You're going, you know, it's like dropping an album and going, sharp, these are the 12 songs I've selected out of the 40 we've worked on. This is how I'm presenting myself to the world. So when something like that happens, it throws you completely.
What's imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I wanted to ask him that. Oh. Like,
yeah.
Imposter syndrome is that voice in your head where you convince yourself that you're not good enough. You know, where even though you've been working on this thing for a long time, you still somehow tell yourself, nah, this is not good. They're not going to like it. So you sway and you never actually fully commit to the thing that you're supposed to be doing because you believe this voice in your head and you believe... You start to create scenarios where you think that this is not what they want to see. You know? So a lot of creative people, will suffer from imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I do.
They never go through
episode,
it.
Dog.
Yeah, like somebody once said something so interesting once, man. They said, like Twitter, for example, is such a toxic place for creative people that it's sad that we never actually get to see dope ideas on here because people are too scared to post it.
Yeah.
Because of what others are going to say.
Yeah.
You know? So we are honestly deprived of amazing stuff and amazing work. Some people actually just give up and they go, I can't do this anymore because of that one negative comment I got. Because people are harsh, you know? So once that imposter syndrome hits you and you start convincing yourself that you're not good enough, if it hits you just before you go on stage, the audience will feel it. Because then the energy... doesn't feel
the same.
Organic.
Mm.
That's the thing about jumping up on stage, you know. Everything here has been rehearsed and done hundreds of times. You've practiced this joke over and over and over again. But to get up on stage and make it flow as naturally as possible, like you're just chatting, you're not throwing it at them. You're with them in this environment.
Every episode we do, I always think it's trash, bro. I think it's the worst episode.
All of us. Yeah, we all do, bro.
It's weird, no?
Yeah, it's
and
weird.
And that's exactly it.
And then people are like, wow, that was my favorite episode. I'm like, what?
Imposter syndrome, right? It's real. And I mean, I use creatives as an example, but it's with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, anybody. Everybody suffers from that, you know, where you convince yourself that you're not good enough, that...
So how do you handle it?
I just have to keep... Dude, I suffer from the worst imposter syndrome,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, I just have to keep going, man. I just have to keep trying, you know? And, you know, it's
that's
weird.
So weird, though. You've been on like 10 million ads.
Yeah, I've done a lot of things. I always have a moment where I go, just that little bit of doubt that sets in to go, you know, was this a mistake?
Ish.
Did they make a mistake when they chose you to do this? And you, there's no other way to get over it other than just getting through it.
You have
to get it done, you know, to see what happens on the other side. Because a lot of times I think that the drama that we create and the anticipation of failing is always stronger than then. When you envision it, we often don't see ourselves and glorify ourselves at the end line, you know. Celebrating, it's always just like, you know, you always think about the process and how hard it is going to be to get there, you know. So and I guess it comes with you know, leaving that little bit of doubt in the back of your mind so you can fight to get to the glory at the end.
You know, there's something Dineo Ranaka once told me which I found fascinating. She said it's weird how in life you will never get to experience how people experience you. So how you make people laugh and whatever, you will never get to be on the receiving end of that.
Kanye actually said something like
for
that.
For real.
Kanye said, my greatest regret in life is that I'll never see myself perform.
Yeah, that's true.
So we never actually get to see. I mean, watching it on screen, that's.
I'm looking at it. Oh, I fucked up here.
Yeah.
Oh, why did I do that? Why did I laugh there?
Yeah. And other people are seeing, they're just like watching this organic thing that's happening and you're like nitpicking at all the details.
Does that happen to you?
Because you
all
have a thing in your head.
For real.
Your biggest critic, you're yourself's biggest critic.
It's all harsh, bro.
You can't enjoy it, you know? You know what you're going to say and you know when you fucked it up and everybody thinks it's perfect. Yeah. I fucked it up there.
How savvy in.
Yay.
Anyway, but dog, I really envy you, bro, because you're like a brand's delight. Huh? You got no scandals, bro. Brands love you.
You're clean.
You're clean. It's not controversial.
Researching, trying to find
industry darling, bro.
Perfect. Everybody loves him.
Bro, you and your wife make beautiful, wholesome videos.
Hey, man.
What's the source, bro? Because obviously you had an upper hand by working in advertising.
Yeah.
So you speak the language, you know what they want.
Yes. Dude, there is no source, man. I'm just myself, you know? And I guess, you know, working in advertising, you understand framework. You understand this is going to work, that's not going to work.
Okay.
This is going to shake people up. If it shakes them up, how do you want them to be shaken up? So I ask a lot of questions, you know? I'm not a risk taker. I'm a calculated risk taker. I have to figure it out before I jump in and actually do this thing, you know? But yeah, dude, in terms of controversies and you're not going to find anything because I don't get myself involved in any of that stuff. I really just try and focus on what I do. You know, I focus on my craft and, you know, trying to be.
What are brands looking for? Because everybody wants to work with a brand now, like whether it's an influencer, an artist, podcasters, everybody.
What are brands looking for? I think brands are looking for people who, one, can take what their ethos, what their messaging is, and flip it and turn it into something. Brands want beautiful synergy, you know? And I always say, like, if I work, I turn down a lot of brands, right? If it doesn't work for me and it doesn't fit into my ethics, it doesn't matter how much it is, I say no, you know? Because I know I'm not going to be able to give you something organic and legit.
Sure.
So I think that personally what I would do if anybody was trying to get into this is to kind of look at what do you want out of this? The last thing you want is to just say yes to everything and you're kind of just a face of whatever. Because those things
fly
by.
You can be a brand whore, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they just fly by. But I like the idea of a perfect synergy where I have my ideals and the way I do things, you have your ideals. Let's meet up here in the middle and see how we can connect to create something that feels like yours and like mine at the same time. And it's harder to do that. It's harder to make that kind of content, you know? But on top of that, you also have to figure out the texture of the landscape that people consume these things in, you know? What is the rhythm of this? How does it sound? How does it look? You know, what is it that people are used to seeing? What can you make that doesn't feel like an ad that is an ad? Because people are smart enough. They can tell.
You're trying to hook me.
You're trying to hook me here. So how do you weave around those things, you know? And that's why I'm enjoying the space that I'm in, because that's what I currently do, you know? People will look at something and go, man, why am I so drawn to this? Kanti, at the end, this is an ad that you're watching. But I'm not making an ad for you. I'm making an interesting story, you know, that's going to grip you from beginning, that you're going to sit through and hopefully share with a friend because you want them to see A, B, and C, you know?
Do you think you get your gigs because on merit or because of your connections in the advertising industry?
No, on merit.
On merit, ne?
Yes, and that's what I strive for all the time. You know, I always try and make anything I make, doesn't matter what it is, as memorable as possible. I want you to, if you're in a boardroom and you're thinking about who are we going to get here, I must at least be in the top five names going, ish, you see that guy? That guy's going to give us something interesting. These four people, often, you know, they're very predictable. We know exactly what they're going to give us. But this guy, he's going to give us something different, but I know it's going to be interesting and it's going to be something. And it happened recently, you know? I mean, I did a thing where I had to make, they sent me a coffee machine.
Yeah.
Right? This very expensive coffee machine. And, you know, the brief was very simple. Hey, we're going to send you this thing. Can you, like, just take a picture with it? And I'm like, no, I don't do that.
Yeah.
If I'm going to say yes to this, you have to give me creative freedom to do it. And I shot, I paid my own money, got a DOP in, and we sat and we figured it out, and we shot a little thing, you know? And it went out, and they were like, whoa, this is not what we were thinking at all. So for me, I always try and rewrite your brief. You know, Loiso Madinga and I did a great, we did a couple of sketches once for a car brand. And when that brief came through, they were like, okay, Sharp, this is what we're going to do. We're going to set a couple of cameras up and some mics in a car, and you guys just do your comedy thing. Wait. Let's step back a little. What do you mean, do your comedy thing? Ah, you know, just like rattle off and do your thing. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. We need a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
You know, we need something to work with here, because you guys don't look like the bad ones. We do. So we took the brief. We rewrote the brief. We solved the brief, and we went back and sold their own brief back to them. And we said, what we need to do here is shoot all these, we wrote all these sketches. This is what we need to do. And we went, and we presented 13. We shot 7, and one of them won a Lurie.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Dope.
And that was such a, and that's how it should be. As a creative person, if you are somebody who creates content, I don't think that you should be 100% dictated by the brief. Because if there's something in there that doesn't make sense to you, you need to go, nah, man, you know what? I'll take what, I'll get your messaging out, but let me throw in what I do.
And do you think, like, in advertising, there are, so, man, I'm looking for a word, man. You know, like in music, there's people that control.
Gatekeepers.
Gatekeepers, yes.
Cabal. Yo, cabal. Hey, hey. Wow.
Fundi.
Yes.
Cabal.
Cabal.
Yes.
Man.
Do you think they're gatekeepers? And I'll tell you why I think they are, but let me hear from you first.
Look, when you are in the industry, so if you're working at an agency, for example,
sure,
and you're entering awards, and I've always noticed this with a lot of advertising, I think any awards, doesn't matter, advertising,
sure,
music,
sure, yeah, yeah.
Often, when you see who the entries are.
By the way, how crazy are the advertising awards where they do cocaine and stuff?
The Lurie's.
Is it the Lurie's?
I think it's the Lurie's.
Yeah, you've done the Lurie's?
I hosted the Lurie's for 4 years, man.
Yeah.
Whoa, bro.
How crazy were they, bro?
No, the Lurie's is insane. But I've been part of the Lurie's, man, because I was in the game, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The Lurie's are insane.
Heard it's wild there, bro.
No, it's wild. But, you know, when you see like a list of nominees, even in music, Samas, whatever
sure,
it is.
Sure, sure, sure.
Often you just go, I know who's going to win this. You just know. You know who's going to win. And I think in the in the ad game, you know, you feel that way as well. Ah, this one is going to take it. But a lot of times it's often, you know, if that thing has won overseas at a big international awards, DNAD, whatever it is, there's a strong chance it's going to win here as well, you know. But I wouldn't really say there's gatekeepers, but they're definitely people that, and I don't know how it works and what the bias is, but it's always the same people who win every single time, you know.
You know what I've seen, bro? I've seen from my experience, I could be wrong because I've never been in advertising, but I think like these agencies are owned by a handful of people who obviously work together because they're all pitching for the same campaign, right? And they choose who gets the deals. So if you lick a lot of ass to these agencies, you're bound to get more deals than other people. It's not based on merit. So for example, if a brand wants the biggest amapiano artist now, they're gonna go get a piano artist that they're friends with and cool with and give them that campaign, as opposed to factually the biggest,
the actual.
But there's that side as well.
Yeah.
Think about anybody who's gotten super successful and is like a hit. Chances are they're going to be in like 3 or 4 ad campaigns, you know, because you're a face. That's what advertising does.
Yeah.
You choose a recognizable face who's super successful, and you use them to sell your product.
Why is Kabza the Small? He's been the hottest piano producer for the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's never gotten a single deal.
An endorsement deal, yeah?
Zero.
Single alcohol brand
zero,
advert.
Zero.
Oh, Crown is...
That doesn't count, my man.
Crown, oh, and he's the king of piano. It counts, though, at least.
But you get what I mean, dog.
But do you think some people say no? When they're like, I don't need this. I don't want this. I know you're turning down a bag.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you're turning down a bag, but it's like, this doesn't...
resonate.
Yeah, with me. Some people do that.
I don't think there's more people that say yes than no.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, obviously. A lot of people will say, because it's big bags, bro.
Yeah.
That's massive.
You know the ad agency that does Castle Light, that does this, boom, yeah, boom, boom. If anything comes up, they're going to call you first.
Oh, yeah. It's like there was a Castle Light, a promoter thing, what? Influencer thing.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with what you're doing. It's just that how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's a great conversation. Yeah, you were saying?
I'm saying, example, there was a Castle Light promoter thing where this girl is pouring the beer in the wrong way. You don't hold beer like that. And the Castle Light is hot. You can see it's hot. And the whole thing of Castle Light is it must be ice cold, right, when you serve it.
Yeah.
You don't pour a drink like you're pouring water or something, especially beer.
Yes.
And that drives the point that it was someone's friend.
Yes.
Got that influencer bag.
Yes.
Is it someone?
Put that thing here, Mesh. It's funny as hell.
That thing is funny. No, that thing was funny.
You remember it, right? Cringe.
Oh, no.
Cringe.
You know? So, with me, going back to your original question. Hey, we deviated here.
We
took many off ramps here. I mean, even with comedy. You know, like even with the stuff I write about, I try and keep it as clean as possible.
Yeah.
You know, I keep it clean. I keep it friendly and accessible to everyone.
Yeah,
you know, because I like to reach a wider audience.
Yeah.
You know, I never like to niche down and go niche up. This is the group that I'm appealing. Nah. Yeah. You know, I like to play it wide and play the long game as well.
No, I love
that's it.
It. Fatherhood, how's fatherhood changed your life?
Yo, dude, unbelievable.
Isn't it?
Given me like a very strong sense of direction now.
Yeah.
You know, I say no to a lot of things right now. And by that, I mean, I don't just go to the opening of an envelope. Yeah, I'm like, what am I doing here? Because time is so precious to me, you know?
Groupies, being with my daughter, you gotta say no to that.
Ah, you listen to this guy. Groupies. No, none of that. So that's what it is for me. You know, it's spending time with my daughter is every single day is a very important part of getting me through my day.
Yeah.
Wow. You know? That's it.
Man, we all have daughters, yes. Yeah.
Do we all have daughters?
Yeah, it's precious, it's man.
Beautiful thing, yeah. It's wild. Blessing. It's
dude.
Precious.
It's a blessing.
Yeah,
are you thinking about if they're going to rock her or not when she's older? That's on my mind, bro.
No, let's not talk about that.
Nah.
No, I will leave this podcast.
You see, friends are watching his brands. You know, he works with every brand under the sun.
How was it working on the Real Housewives of Durban reunion?
Yeah.
I was nervous, man.
Yeah.
I was, you know, because you're dealing with very strong, powerful
women
egos. You know, they big, you know. You know what the hardest part about hosting Real Housewives was? The backlash I got.
For real? You got backlash?
I wanted to ask you about that, yeah?
Yeah!
Twitter.
For real? Yeah, they were roasting him.
Yeah, Fat Joe wasn't even trending. Fat Joe should have done this thing. We told you from the get-go. Why is Fat Joe? Because he did the first one, right?
Yeah, Fat Joe did the first one.
Yeah, bro, that was nasty.
And then I did the next one, you know? And I was like, yo, I had to go off social media. Me, I don't have a thick skin like you guys. Cut me so deep, you know, because...
fuck, man.
It just, and you know what happened? So I went off of Twitter just not to see any of that negativity.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I started getting Google alerts from articles that were written. Fans! Outrage!
People sending you WhatsApp screenshots.
Exactly. Hey. Yo, bro, did you see what they said?
Yo,
I was
like, yo man, I'm not trying to see that
then
shit.
Then you start doubting yourself.
Imposter
syndrome.
Exactly. This is before the episode even dropped.
Mm.
Way before, 2 weeks before. I'm like, yo, you guys haven't even seen me do this thing yet. And already you're telling me, this is going to be the most boring show. We are not going to watch. This is the worst decision. Hey. The ratings are going to drop. I'm like, guys, really? Hard, bro. It was so hard.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Hey, it was hectic, bro. Yes. At some point I was like, okay, let me not go and find all of this, you know, because it was hectic. So
we go through that every week.
No, yeah, that's bro. The thing. So I did it and you know, I started getting a lot of positive feedback afterwards. But it was an incredible experience, bro, because like I say, being put in that room with very powerful women who have, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, their personalities are obviously all different. And this is the first time they're coming together after the show has been filmed. So they've seen what others have said about them for the first time.
They're
seeing it for the first
time.
But
isn't that stuff scripted?
What? The stuff that? No.
Ooh,
it's not scripted. Wow. So, you know what it is? It's edited.
Oh.
So if they shoot for a full day
and
an episode is 45 minutes long or whatever it is, so if there's drama that unfolds here, we hold on that drama. You know, it's excuse me, still TV. It's reality TV at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And what I came in with, I just came in with a bit of compassion. I'm like, I'm not going to come in here and treat you guys like the characters that people see,
We're going to strip that away.
Let's just have a conversation. Yeah. So, like, before we even started shooting, we're just chatting about whatever, just normal stuff, just to get everybody comfortable. Because if I ask you a question, I don't need you to close up.
Mm.
I need you to not feel like I'm attacking you and I'm trying to get something out of you for the sake of ratings, for the sake of spice.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to start a fight. I just want to know genuinely, because I watched the show. I had to watch the show, to understand what was happening. Can't just go in there blindly in jail and just start throwing things around. We shot, bruh.
Yeah.
We shot for 8 hours. We shot for 8 hours. It's a long time, but it was great. It was an amazing experience, man, and something I never thought I would do, but it was intense. It really was intense, because there were moments when you could feel like tension was building.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, at some point I'm gonna have to come here and
Kuzla.
Where we at right now, man? What are you busy with right now?
Yeah.
I'm juggling so many things at the moment. Working on a lot of campaigns.
Yeah.
Trying to
give us some now that we know you.
I can throw some things.
Yeah, yeah. Throw some stuff.
Some
no, I know guys.
Yeah.
Do a little podcast. I can push this stuff.
This tiny little thing,
Yeah.
This is a tiny thing. Working on a couple of campaigns. I've always wanted to make a documentary, write a movie, direct a music video.
Nice.
I the creative space, man, I try and treat it as this organic thing. Like I mentioned earlier, I never need focus on a specific niche. I really try and immerse myself in a lot of different things.
100%.
So if you ask me, what's your 5-year plan? I can't tell you that exactly, because a lot of things happen within that and things change all the time. All I know is I'm just going to be making a lot of stuff that makes me happy first. In a nutshell, I'm trying to write the book that I want to read.
Hey, love that.
You know what I'm saying?
Fucking love it.
So yeah, that's me.
And what are you going to be remembered as, man?
Wow. That's a tough question.
Hey, you can tell he's not a Chile. We ask every guest that, eh?
Yeah.
I never think about
question
it.
Question is always coming.
No, but I never plan. I don't even like to plan any of this stuff. Like the spontaneity of it. I think I just want to be remembered as, wow, bro, I think just an exceptional storyteller.
Nah.
Somebody who was able to take the most mundane, relatable topics that we all looked over and polish it and turn it into something else that made us stop and go, wow, that's insane.
Yeah.
I think I like people to always just think of me as, whenever they see anything I've put out or when they watch this, they go, what is he going to do next? I like that anticipation, like leaving people in anticipation about what's next, what else could he be getting himself involved in? So I mean, if I decided I wanted to start making chairs,
why not?
Yeah.
Because that's what I love, and that's what I'm inspired by. If it involves creating something, that's what I'm going to do. But so there's no one thing that I want people to remember me for. Yeah.
Wow. Do you get compared a lot with Trevor Noah? Because you kind of carry yourself the same way.
You almost speak like him.
Yeah.
I hear it
And he's clean.
A bit of him.
He's
clean.
And the third,
he was white when he was a kid. All these common threads.
You know what happened once now? In my first year of doing comedy, I did an interview. I think it was at YFM.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See, that sounded like Trevor Noah. I think it was YFM.
Listen to this guy. Now you're going to nitpick everything. And I can't remember who it was that interviewed me, but they said, man, I saw you perform wherever, YFM was there.
Yeah.
I love that. I love what you do, And what is it about Trevor that made you also take on the Xhosa thing? I'm like... What?
What in the tremor?
I'm assuming. Not like you grew up in the Eastern Cape. You spoke Khoisa.
I was like, is that what you... Is that what you see? Is that what you get out?
Oh, and I'm assumed.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, man. That,
you know, what in the like tremor so is that?
Away, you know, like, no, guys, this is just...
What a travesty.
This is me. I'm just telling stories. That was awful, by the way. You do? Have you ever done stand-up?
No,
don't. No, I'm kidding. No, man. Yeah, that thing hit me, bro. Yeah, I was like, damn, is that... No, I'm just doing me, bro. Yeah, really am just trying to do me. And you know what happened? I then ended up writing in a very different way so people wouldn't see that because this is what I thought. Then I'm like, no, man, that's... Yeah. Let me come back to...
How did you answer the question?
I just went, no. What? I was confused, bro. I thought you're not ready for a question like that. I was very confused. I'm like, hi, man. What do you mean? Why would you even ask me that?
David Goliath, thank you so much for coming through, man.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it, man. So, anything you want to ask?
Yeah, man. Who? Quick, direct question. Who's the least funniest between you, Donovan, and Nicholas?
I am Donovan.
I mean, Jonathan. Hey, Jonathan. You are...
There is no Jonathan.
Hey, man. The other... Jason. Jason. You, Jason. You,
Hi,
Jason.
And awful.
And you, Jason, and Nicholas. Is there a Nicholas?
There is a Nicholas.
Who's the least funniest in your
what
opinion?
What podcast have you been watching?
Yay.
Hey, man, it's confusing. This Goliath, Donovan, David.
And there's Kate, the manager.
Then there's Kate, the Goliath. You know what I mean?
No, that's you can't. That's that question can't be answered. Because if you flip it and you go, who is the funniest? It depends on the audience. The audience decides because we all
you
have
are the
our
audience
own,
right now.
We all have our own strengths, you know. We all have our own styles and ways of doing comedy. So there is no unfunny person. I've died.
Least funniest.
Ooh, this is why brands love him. Did you see how he maneuvered
that
one?
Yeah, he tried to dribble us, bro.
No, I'm not even dribbling at all.
We've been broadcasting 20 years between me and more, in fact.
Nah, there is no least funniest person, man. There is no least funniest person. I can't... That's a very unfair question. And for me to single anybody out would be like, nah, what are you saying? That makes no sense.
I got you.
You know?
Cool, man.
All right, cool, man.
Thanks, guys. You guys are so disappointed. Nah, come on. Here goes. You can see. Look how he turned his thing on. Yes. Next. What's the next question that I'm going to ask?
Hey, man. We're out here. Podcast and chill. Boom.
Thank you so much.
To advertise, email podcast@thisismaggie.com. Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Maggie.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.